Okay, here we go. This is episode 9F21, the cleverly titled Homer's Barbershop Quartet, first broadcast September 30th, 1993. I'm Matt Groening.
This is Mike Reese, the showrunner on this show. Hey, before we go, what is I Will Never Win an Emmy? Did we lose an Emmy that year?
I think Claymation Easter had just beaten us.
Okay, sorry.
So we Claymation Easter was great.
This is LG, and I was another of the showrunners, and this episode was a holdover, recorded in season 4, although it aired the following fall.
This is Jeff Martin. I wrote this episode and thought of the title.
This is Mark Kirkland. I was the animation director on this episode.
This is John Lovitz. I was not in this episode. I'm just here to make jokes and entertain you.
This is Hank Azaria. I was in this episode, but really I'm mostly here to be entertained by John.
So where did this episode come from, Jeff?
This was just an idea that was thought of in the room to do, let's have Homer be in a barbershop quartet and do a big parody of the Beatles. And I was an obsessive Beatles fan, so I guess that made me a natural to write it.
Wow. Why'd we go with all of these? This is, it's great.
Look at this creative couch gag.
Probably the episode was short.
It might have been short. Was this our premiere then for that season?
It was our premiere. There was a big story about that, which was Conan had written a show called Homer Goes to College, and Fox wanted a premiere with that because they thought, oh, Homer in college will be like Animal House. But this show had a beetle in it.
Yeah.
A real live beetle. And then it was very hard to get it to air at first.
What?
From your garden?
No, George Harrison.
Oh.
I'm just saying, he thought that was a really exciting thing.
Yeah.
So we finally won the day with that.
Kingfield Swap Meat Patron.
This was a really
Who's
fun
doing
episode
this voice?
To do.
I don't even remember. Unlike many really good episodes, there wasn't much trouble on this one, was it?
This one was fun. It was just fun. Everyone liked doing Beatles-type gags. They liked the barbershop music, and then they liked the mid-80s
gags. That was one of the most
gags.
Insane Mo gags ever written. Mo imitating Lucille Ball for no reason.
Well, that actually exists. I actually saw those in a swap meet in Florida. Clamshell Lucy's.
That one had a pearl in it, though. It's definitely worth the price.
With this episode, too, I think it was like last month, a school phenomenon where a lot of the writers were leaving. So it was kind of nostalgic, you know, we were just looking back on the first 4 years of the show, and but we all came back.
Yeah, they took her off the market after some...
That was a censor note. They didn't want us to do
Hank,
that,
wasn't
though.
That you?
That was me.
Yeah,
thank
we should actually
John.
Say that's Thanks called the much. Wise guy voice, that's although it's a lot like voice. Charles Bronson.
It's basically Charles Bronson, correct.
Prisoner 24601, whatever it is, that's Jean Valjean's prisoner number in Les Miserables.
That's Harry Shearer, isn't it?
That's Harry Skinner.
Now, did you say, Jeff, that you actually saw Oyster Shell Lucy's or you saw Bible trading cards?
Oyster Shell Lucy.
Wow.
Junk.
These are very clever references. It's the original Superman, right, and the most famous irregular stamp.
The animation on this, I watched it yesterday, my first time in years watching it, and I recalled when we got the script, all the animators just fell in love with the tracks that we got in the music. And I don't think there's anything spectacular in our animation, but we just loved working on it, and we tried to come up to the level of the music and the singing.
Dug a feather in his cap and called it right ironic.
Velvet! Yeah, maybe you can even start talking about it now, Jeff, because we intermixed our cast singing with a real barbershop quartet.
Right. Well, there's this barbershop quartet at Disneyland, the Dapper Dans. And they're very good, and so when we started doing this episode, I called Disneyland and got in touch with them, and they were happy to do it.
And, please let us out of Disneyland.
<What now?
laughs> Please let us out of Disneyland.
More
hello,
than
hello,
happy
hello,
to do
we'll
it.
Sign.
Yes. Get back in your poo
Wait,
costume.
How did you know them? But how did you know of them?
Seeing them sing on Main Street in Disneyland.
And all the way to Anaheim.
People Express introduced a generation of hicks to plane travel.
Whenever we do these, it's the Dapper Dan singing, except we mixed in our cast here and there. That's all our cast. And here, the only cast member is Hank, is Chief Wiggum.
Ragtime gal.
Every afternoon at Moe's, Chief Wiggum, Prince...
Generally speaking, one of our cast members would sing the melody, and the others are the Dapper Dans.
the Beatle references obviously start here, where Moe's Cavern is the Cavern Club, and then Chief Wiggum is Pete Best. And I think that was one of the things where we, once we hit on the Beatles, then we really wanted to do it, because everybody in the staff loved all the Beatles arcana so much. John Sarnet.
And I, too, directing it, felt I've been a huge Beatles fan my whole life, so I enjoyed plugging him in visually and just trying to make sure they were correct and things like that.
But the great thing about the show is then you go, oh, can we get an actual Beatle to appear? And you do. It's really
so George
amazing.
Harrison did really did his own voice?
It's really his own voice.
Wow.
There's a story
so
about
this
that.
This show has everything. Everything except Jews.
Well,
what do you think?
Hey,
how do you explain
that?
Right.
There are no Jews.
No
in
Jews.
Springfield.
No
look, John,
Jews.
We're on your side. We know
actually,
what you're
we just
to
heard
say.
From
it's
the old Jewish man.
Yeah.
Krusty's
you were
Jewish.
Just in the show, John. You missed it, you bastard.
This may kill the series, but three of our
hey,
regular
church.
Cast members
why
are Jewish.
Why couldn't it have been a temple?
Goodbye, my Coney Island, babe. The other fun thing to do with the animation was the choreography. We had this beautiful harmony, and we tried to have our characters look like they're fitting to the sound, basically. And so, but it was fun. The animators, we had a lot of fun just coming up with like things like this.
Oh, I did want to say, because we just saw Jailbird. Hank, weren't both Jailbird and Comic Book Guy based loosely on people you knew?
Both of them based on people I went to college with, yeah.
Homer, I'm a theatrical agent, and I want to represent your group.
Really?
You've got it.
Comic Book Guy is a guy who talked like this. His name was F. He lived next door to me. I don't know what his real name was, but everyone called him F.
Wow.
Wow.
I get more questions about him than any character.
Comic
they go,
guy?
Who's he based on? And who? And
I heard that people thought he was based on Ralph
Bakshi. And
everybody
thinks he's based on a specific guy that they know.
Yes. I mean, that's how, especially the design, I think, is so universal. And in fact, there is a comic book store in our neighborhood here. The owner of it looks just like comic book.
I have some sad news for you. It's under new management.
Oh, no.
He's not there anymore.
Oh.
But yes, he looked just like it.
What character runs it now?
No, it's...
Another guy looks like comic book.
Yeah.
It's a,
you know, I always... David Merkin, who ran the show for a while, he was such a Beatles freak that I always remembered this as a David Merkin show, but
no,
he's not.
No, I think actually it was B that wanted to start putting Beatles stuff in, but everybody wanted to do it once the idea came in. It was
but Merkin did
such a universe.
The
Merkin is probably the
show,
most,
right?
You know, the biggest fanatic on the staff.
Yeah.
I can tell a story about George Harrison, which was when he came in to record the show, it was supposed to be a big secret, and the casting director told Mike Reese and me, George Harrison's coming in, you can't tell anybody, it's not supposed to be, you know, public, so you can go see him, but keep it secret. So we said, oh, we've got some editing to do, and we, like, snuck out of the rewrite room, and then Matt was there. And then we came back with Matt, and he comes in the room and goes, guess who I just met, George Harrison?
Well, I didn't get the word that we were going
to say. So,
you're
like
so
the
mad at us. Why? Well, I didn't. I also remember, though, that George Harrison came into the studio in West L.A. by himself. No entourage,
yes,
no bodyguards, no nothing. And I remember him being pretty glum, you know, and wasn't very enthusiastic when we asked him Beatles questions. But I asked him about the Wonderwall album. And he suddenly perked up, because he was talking about a solo album we probably didn't get asked about. And he was went on and on about how great Eric Clapton was and how much fun he had doing that album.
Was he a nice guy?
Yeah, super nice.
Very
guy.
Sweet.
Well, I remember as we went into the room where he was recording after he's done, and, you know, like to shake his hand, he goes, you just want to get in the room with me, don't you? And was like, yes, that's right.
We should explain this is sort of a steal of Frank Fontaine.
Oh, Crazy Guggenheim, absolutely, yeah.
On the old Jackie Gleason show, he was this drunk that basically Barney is based on, I think.
That's Crazy Guggenheim?
Yeah, well, and then he would always sing, and he had a beautiful voice. He'd sing an old-fashioned song at the end. So, but this is really Dan Castellaneta singing.
But the premise was always he'd get Joe
Dan
the bartender really...
Dan singing?
Yes.
Dan sings for Barney, yeah.
Oh, right, I mean, he says nice voice.
Irish stereotype.
Well, that's the old Irish guy who was beaten up on Whacking Day.
Yeah.
Well, we found Irish are the only ethnic group you can really make fun. We do Italians, too. We're very embarrassed to say, but that's
hey, those
it.
Those girls you paid to scream are doing a great job.
No, I didn't pay any girls to scream.
Remember, the internal direction on that line was too big.
But actually, it's come to be sort of a catchphrase from all that. Wah! Like,
wow,
something
yeah.
that's really shocking to him.
It's gotten much bigger since then, actually. You know, recording Wiggum a couple of months ago, I actually threw my neck out. It's the wimpiest injury you can possibly get.
And you work out a lot.
And I tend to work out, exactly.
Well, you might want to say for the DVD audience where the voices for Mo and Wiggum came from, too, if you care to.
Mo is based on John Lovitz, of course. And
no, John Lovitz is a Mo.
And so is Wiggum.
Yes, I'm a Mo. And could you, Al and Mike, stop kissing?
No, we can't.
We can't.
Mo was grown out of me trying to get Al and Mike to stop kissing. My voice got so raspy.
So it's not just me.
No.
I got this cool pencil holder.
Far out, man. I haven't seen a bong in years.
No one bought a wishbone necklace.
Mo is based on Al Pacino from Dog Day Afternoon. When I remember, Matt, the first audition I had was for Mo, and I was doing a play at the time where I was playing a drug dealer and I was talking like this.
Hey, so what episode? You started on what episode? Like third or fourth?
But the second, third, or fourth, I don't know which.
Yeah,
but everything
I
aired.
I always think of you as the new guy.
But everything that aired had Hank in it. It was
technically
always,
I am.
Huh.
You came in and re-recorded some of the voices because
we had
a different
guy named
Mo.
Chris Collins doing Mo.
Which never aired. It was always you on the air.
Right. Oh, is that bad?
You know, it's funny. Al Pacino loves me.
That is funny.
Baby on board, something, something, Burt Ward.
I don't know what's the first one I recorded myself, but then I re-recorded an episode or two, just a line or two. But you also based Mo on that the series of those crank phone calls.
Yeah, there were those tapes that were floating around, phone calls to Red,
right?
The tube bar. We had no idea where it came from, but now you can go on the internet and find out the whole scoop. We were paying tribute to those crazy phone calls.
And I was talking like Pacino, young Pacino up here, and you said you wanted to be raspy like Red, so I made it raspy, and that was Mo.
Who does the voice of the manager there?
That is Harry.
Oh.
When I go out in public a lot, out there, you know, talking to places, people say, "You look like Mo." And it's like, I know Mo was designed after a gorilla. They took a gorilla.
People think you
right?
look like Mo?
No, they think I look like Mo, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I look like Principal Skinner. Eat your heart out.
I always thought you looked like Al. Al's lover.
As a director, when I look at off-model drawings of Mo, I let them go through production because I figure he's so ugly people won't really catch on.
And
so.
Yet he looks like me.
Mike is crying.
Interesting note.
Why would they think that? Because people sometimes go to me, "Oh, you should do a voice. You have a cartoon voice." And I go like, "What does that mean, asshole?"
It means you sound like Wally Cox.
I don't think it's a compliment. It's just how I talk.
You do sound like Wally
Underdog.
And he, well...
Well, now that you mention it, you sound like Wally Cox, who was the voice of Underdog. It's a compliment. Wally Cox is best friends with Marlon Brando.
Really?
Who
yes,
signed Nico Brando, my friend, is in the other room as we speak. What does this have to do with this episode? Nothing. What do I have to do with this episode? Nothing. That's why I'm saying what I am. Being consistent.
Have you seen
them somewhere?
That's what Elvis gave his mother, a pink Cadillac, I guess. I don't know what this is doing in a Beatles parody.
Well, in the Albert Goldman book about Elvis, they said that was the thing that nearly broke Elvis's budget. He was giving everybody a Cadillac in the mid-60s.
That will eat into your budget.
Yeah. Question for Apu de Beaumarchais. Isn't it true that you're really an Indian?
By the many arms of...
Isn't that Hank Along Came Polly Azaria?
Not in theaters anymore, but available on DVD soon, I imagine. This was one of the first episodes I remember doing a lot in.
Doing a lot?
Having a lot of material to do, having
really?
My characters
really?
Featured in.
Flaming Moe's?
You mean this is the first episode you remember that they actually used you?
Pretty much.
Where you fell off. Well, I'm not wasting my time today.
Well, it was the first time everyone was nice to me. Let's put it that way.
We were nice.
No, what's great about writing for your characters is that you could get a laugh with a single line. And it was great. If the lines were semi-funny, you'd figure out a way of pulling a real big laugh out of those lines.
Well, also what happened too is at the beginning we were doing Homer and Marge stories or Bart, you know, so the other characters got fleshed out as the seasons progressed.
It's one of the great sadnesses for me that Harry gets to do Johnny Carson and not me.
Hmm.
I always want to do Johnny.
Why is he wearing a fez, Mark?
The fez was because of legal reasons, where we were saying
couldn't do the Karnak?
At that point, we had to have something that distinguished it from...
I think it was film footage. Carson would wear his turban with the...
So we changed it to a fez.
Yeah. You would have had legal problems if that character was in a turban?
Well, you might remember in the script he was called Elderly Talk Show Host.
He was never
called Johnny Carson.
But we've seen him in a turban in an earlier episode doing Karnak. Some of this is Al and I. We used to write for Carson, and we had a bunch of old Karnaks we had to burn off.
Seen elsewhere. What is the message on Mother Teresa's answering machine? That's the real one we wrote.
Did that one make it to the air, or you just had that one?
No, he cut it, and then we put it on an Alf episode.
Here's George.
There he is.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God! Where did you get that?
I remember you guys came back glowing. You were dead. He was so nice, and he looked great and all that.
Oh, it was a huge thrill.
Oh, man.
Wow, what a nice fella. My brother-in-law actually is a huge Beatles fan and saw George Harrison and had that moment with him, and George was so unhappy when my brother-in-law accosted him. My brother-in-law said, "It can't be!" And George said, "No, it can't."
I imagine if I were one of them, you'd just get so sick of it after, you know, all that time. It's everyone wants to just talk to you and always ask about the same 6 years in your life.
Yeah.
Here's a gag. My daughter Jamie, who's watching in the other room, asked me yesterday, "Why are you guys always bagging on the Grammys?"
Well, I don't know why we slammed the Grammys and Johnny Carson a lot. And I remember Dan Castellaneta at the table readings when we'd do it would like turn to me and say something like, "Take that," or "That'll show him." It was always very unmotivated.
We only slam awards we don't think we have any possible chance of winning.
There's a perception that the Grammys are given out too frequently. I mean, that they're kind of a silly award, but Johnny Carson, I don't know, everybody really likes
him. Oh, yeah. He did it.
He was on the show.
He was very charming.
He employed me for a year.
Did you ever ask him to do a show?
He did a show. Yeah, he was great and really nice. Yep, played himself.
I can't hear. I got this thing going in my ear.
That was one of the, you know, most thrilled to meet a celebrity ever was meeting Johnny Carson at The Simpsons that day.
Oh, so what's your Carson impression? I never heard you do it.
I just did it.
Oh, you did?
Before. I guess that the guess is why Harry does it.
I was off having Johnny a tryst Carson. With Al Jean.
He's weird.
Here's a nice little piece Johnny of animation. Yes.
I Al Jean
think that David Silverman had a hand in this.
Your Johnny Carson sounds like Casey Kasem.
I know. That's what I was trying to do.
Meanwhile, the group...
Now, this is a very clever, subtle Beatles homage.
Yeah, like the Let It Be sessions. Now, Mark, aren't some of the poses in this actually taken from the pictures in the Let It Be album?
Also, we watched it, and the actual compositions and camera angles are spot on from Let It Be.
Wow.
That's great.
Like this, you mean? This stuff?
I know about this.
Did your dad ever shoot the Beatles?
Yes, he did.
John Lennon.
Famous and, photographer. My father's a photographer who shot John Lennon, photographically, that is. And
that shot is exactly
that
from
is exact.
The Let It Be album.
And he also photographed Ringo Starr. And also the thing I remember thinking that I think we're the only TV show that has ever had all of the three surviving Beatles to appear. Because we've also had Ringo and Paul.
David Merkin recorded Paul, and he flew to England to do it. And he said to Paul, "Now that we've got the three of you, we could just mix it together and make a new Beatles song." And he said Paul was really scared for about a minute. Like, "Oh, my God, you better not." And then he realized he was joking. Also very nice, according to David. He said he was just a great guy. And Linda also.
Yeah, that was another episode of mine.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
I like this gag right here.
Notice the color of Yoko?
Yeah.
Sort of ashen colored. It's a little
evil.
Who's
the voice of Barney?
Dan. Dan. Dan.
Who? Sounds like Bobcat Goldthwait, doesn't it? I said, doesn't it? I will not be ignored.
I would always think we'd get a guest star who was like George Harrison, and then we would make fun of the singing at the top of the roof, like the Let It Be album, and then they would do a joke about it. I go, do they realize we're making fun of one of their things? Like, I don't know if they did, but it'd just be amazing to me that they'd let us refer to it and make a joke about it.
There are perfectly good answers to
how about those pupils, Mark?
Yeah, a little big. They're generous.
You bastard.
Yeah, okay, that's another back of the Sgt. Pepper album.
With a butt crack, yeah.
Yep, with a butt crack.
Ringo is awfully
was Julie Kavner sick this
too?
Week?
Oh, that's great.
Where the hell's Marge?
Those you are the actual outfits the different Beatles wore.
And also, well, funny about rooftop this concert. You notice their hair blowing, which normally we don't do that, but that was what happened in the and Let It Be.
Well, also, since this was the premiere, they made life-size cutouts of these guys, and so in the writer's room, we have Barney dressed like John Lennon, but no one knows why he's got that coat on. Nobody
I still have
that.
The Apu cutout.
You still do?
Dressed as whoever he's dressed as there. Human
fly here. Why didn't that become a recurring character?
Human fly.
Human fly guy. Now, the Dapper Dans, I saw him like a year ago at Disneyland, and they told me they still get requests for Baby on Board.
Oh, that's so
that's
great.
That's great, huh?
Do they do it?
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Lawsuit.
Disneyland.
It's being done. Pretty, huh, Chief?
It sure is, Lou.
Lou is also voiced by Hank.
Who's based on Stallone.
Yeah.
Wiggum was still a little different then. Wiggum's higher now. Well, why? Not on pot or anything.
Why do all the episodes seem to be about the same length and time?
This was an episode where Mike and I thought, oh, this was a good last episode for us to have done when we went off to do something else. And now five times I've said that. This is the last Simpsons I'll ever work on.
That whole end bit, that was an ad-lib from Dan Castellaneta. Great wasn't job. It?
Yes, it was.
What, the like the...
Oh, the parody of Get
yeah.
Back?
Yeah, well, yeah, they the John Lennon yeah. thing at the yeah. end of Get
saying,
Back.
Our cast contributes. They're funny.
Yeah.
They absolutely. Except John Lovitz, he's gay.
There you go.
Gay as in happy.
Now, the question for all our fans is why John Lovitz comments on an episode he's not in, but did no commentary for the Critic DVD.
I wasn't asked to.
Get a phone.
Shh.